As legroom and airliners shrinks, passengers are feeling the crunch. Recently, in-air scuffles have been breaking out as people argue over the right to recline, in some cases leading planes to be diverted. A new device called the Knee Defender lets passengers jam the seat of the person in front of them so it can't recline. The whole thing has raised questions about why flying can be so stressful these days, who's to blame, and whether or not passengers have the right to tilt the seat back, even in economy seats where there's not a lot of room.
William J. McGee joins us now. He's a writer, consumer journalist, and the author of Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Descent, Dangerous Descent, and How to Reclaim Our Skies. William, thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me on.
So first of all, can you describe the Knee Defender for us?
Sure. It's a device that you basically put in front of yourself, and it jams the seat in front of you from being able to recline back. It's an interesting thing in that it's legal, and you can buy it anywhere in the United States. The FAA has sort of punted on this and left it up to the airlines whether or not you can use it. But the bottom line is that most U.S. airlines don't even allow its use. So I sort of liken it to rolling paper. You know, it's a device that you can buy legally, but you probably can't use it legally in most states.
Hmm. Well, a lot of airline passengers think the idea itself is genius, and it raises the argument about whether there's actually really room for anyone to recline if you're in those economy rows where there seems to be less legroom lately. Is that really the core of the issue, whether or not people have the right to put their seat back?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of infighting among passengers. I've sort of just watched over the last couple of weeks as this war has played out on the internet and blog comments. But the bottom line is, in my view, this is really not about passenger versus passenger. It's really about how the airlines are responsible for creating these situations. I wrote an article last week for Yahoo News called The Seven Ways the Airlines Are Pitting Us Against Each Other. And right at the top of the list is this issue of reducing legroom and other factors that are just combining to make flying such a miserable experience these days.
Well, it is, you know, you're kind of in a pressure cooker when you're up there in the airplane, and tempers do flare more easily. And this seems to be something that people are pretty worked up about. You know, just the idea, we talked about it in our staff meeting, and there were definitely people in different camps. Some people really felt like you should be able to recline. That is your right to be a little more comfortable. And other people feel like, no, there's just not room. It's not realistic. And it does come down to passenger against passenger. What do you make of that?
Yeah, no question. I've seen it play out, you know, by passenger size and passenger age and all kinds of issues. But I've seen it defined as a right, you know, the term you just used, the right to recline versus the right to not have your knees shoved into your chest. And there are some serious health issues that could arise, too. You know, even deep vein thrombosis from sitting in the same position for too long. But, you know, again, for me, this comes back to the fact that this is a relatively new phenomenon that we've seen so much infighting, you know, among passengers and among passengers and crew members in the last 10 or 12 years because there's been so many changes in the airline industry and they have done some very deliberate things to make the experience more miserable. I'm not saying they're doing it because they're trying to make us miserable, but it's a side effect of the, you know, the policies that they've implemented. And those are the policies that, you know, I outlined last week.
Well, so why is it such a pressure cooker up there today?
Well, I think the first and foremost, the thing that has changed dramatically is what the industry calls a load factor, which is just simply the percentage of occupied seats. To put it in context, we have a point now where airplanes are more crowded than they have been at any time since World War II when U.S. airlines were troop carriers. So basically for more than 50 years, airlines in the United States had an occupancy factor of between 50 and 60 to 65%. Now in the last 10 or 15 years, what we've seen is the averages are well over 80% these days. The latest statistics for May show that domestic flights were 86.3% full. And, of course, that's an average, so that means an awful lot of flights were 100% full. And this is just new to, you know, the flying experience. And in my view, this leads to so many other problems, the problems with air rage, with problems among passengers, uncomfortable seating, the battle for the overhead bin space. All of this in many ways stems from this deliberate decision on the part of airlines to fill airplanes as they never have before.
Well, isn't that because the airlines are struggling and they're trying to make some money and stay afloat?
Well, they are and they aren't. It's a very cyclical industry, and they've been doing this when they've been making money, and they've been doing this when they've been losing money. They've basically, you know, found a way to use technology to fill seats like they really never have before, particularly online. And you know, for the airlines, it's a good thing, no question. They are getting, you know, more bang for their buck, and they're filling seats that in the past they wouldn't have. But I have a background in airline flight operations. I'm an FAA licensed dispatcher, and I used to release flights and schedule flights and reschedule them and schedule extra section flights. And I can tell you that transportation systems aren't meant to operate at 80 or 85% of capacity day in and day out. You're basically working at sort of, you know, rush hour peak all the time. And that's what's led to so many problems in recent years. And the system sort of breaks down when you run it at that capacity day in and day out.
So is that what we're talking about here? You know, before you even board the plane, you're probably not in a relaxed state at that point. Boarding the plane is difficult. You have to rush, as you write in your piece, to get your luggage in the overhead bins before someone else fills it up, and you're jostling with lots of people in a cattle call, and then some guy puts the knee defender on, and that's the last straw.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Those are some of the things that I've outlined, is that, you know, everyone's aware who's flown recently about the airline's decision to try and implement more and more fees. So, you know, you're paying fees for checked baggage. On three U.S. airlines, you're paying fees for even for the carry-on baggage. You're paying fees for preferred seating, early boarding, all of these things. So, you know, there was a time when people used to hang back and want to be the last one to board. But now with checked baggage fees, there's more and more heavy, large baggage that's coming into the cabin. And so we're all fighting to get to that, you know, overhead bin space. And so you're right. I mean, the boarding area in many cases looks like a mosh pit.
And what can passengers do about it? I mean, right now it doesn't seem as though anyone's winning. What do we need to do as passengers if they want to advocate for themselves?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, because I'm a consumer advocate, and I always try and offer, you know, my readers the best possible advice. But, you know, we're really in a bit of a crisis stage when you look at this, because, you know, you're going to be able to help some people, but you're not going to be able to help everybody. The days of an empty middle seat in airlines, which used to be the standard, those are just gone now. And, you know, there seems to be no indication that, you know, that they're coming back. The airlines are making no effort to, you know, reduce the load factors that we spoke about. And so it makes for a much more uncomfortable experience. At the same time, you have many airlines, you know, reducing seat pitch, the distance between rows, and making it more uncomfortable. And then the answer is, from the airlines, and this is even, you know, last week, an airline trade organization said this publicly, that if you're unhappy, then you should pay more and you should sit up front, which, of course, is not an option for many passengers. So there are tricks here and there to, you know, try and book early and maybe pay extra for a preferred seat. But, you know, for an awful lot of us, it's going to be an uncomfortable, even miserable experience.
I've got a caller here. Let's take Eric in Baraboo. Hi, Eric.
I think the huge part of the problem is there's lack of communication, and especially in public. I'm 6'2", and when I fly, it's always miserable. But I always turn around and ask the person if they mind if I put my seat back, and I've never had a problem. And I can't understand what a knee defender is, but it sounds like something that a tool that keeps people from having to talk to each other in public.
Right. So maybe even just basic politeness, interact with the people around you, and see if they're okay with putting your seat back. Thanks a lot for that thought, Eric. Is that a simple solution?
Well, I think there's no question that there's, you know, what we've been talking about really are root causes. And, of course, you know, I want to make very clear there's never, you know, an excuse for inappropriate behavior, and certainly not for violent behavior, as we've seen in recent weeks. So there's no question that, you know, this is a big issue of civility here. What I've been addressing is sort of the root causes, because I think it's important to look at that before we break off into two camps. Are you a knee defender, or are you a pushbacker? You know, when we all square off and start battling like the Jets and the Sharks over this, I do think, you know, it's important to talk about, well, who created this situation and why? But having said that, sure, there's no question. I mean, I certainly agree with the caller. I was on a flight a couple of weeks ago, and the guy next to me was about 6'5", and his knees were up in his chest before we even left. And when the woman in front of him tried to put her seat back, it was physically impossible. He didn't need a knee defender. His knees were the defenders. Aww. So, you know, he politely said to her, you know, don't try and put your seat back because you can't, you know. And she just didn't really say anything, and, you know, and we went on our way. But there's no question that, you know, tempers are sort of flaring before we even get into the cabin, as you pointed out. It is such a different experience these days. By the time you get through security and by the time you go through the boarding process and all that, a lot of nerves are frayed before you even sit down. So the knee defender is sort of the final straw in a lot of cases.
We're talking right now with William J. McGee. He's a writer, consumer journalist, teacher, and the author of the book Attention All Passengers, The Airline's Dangerous Descent and How to Reclaim Our Skies.
And we want to hear from you on this. What do you think of this knee defender? Do we have a right to recline in our seats? Who's to blame for the fight for legroom? The guy in front of you putting his seat back or the airlines? Call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
We're talking about the controversial new device known as the knee defender. It keeps the person ahead of you from reclining their seat, thereby saving your knees from getting crunched. But some people say it's not okay and that all passengers have the right to recline.
And we want to hear from you on this airline issue. What do you think of this idea of a knee defender on a plane? Do we have a right to recline our seats? Who's to blame for the fight for legroom? The person leaning back or the airlines themselves? And do you have your own cramped airplane story? Call 800-642-1234 or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org.
Going to go to our phones now. Linda joins us in La Crosse. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I would like to say I've been on an international flight recently, and if I could not recline the seat, I would never make it. The seats are so uncomfortable when they're straight up and down. But I also had no problem with the person in front of me reclining. I did put my seat up when we ate. I thought that would make it easier for the person behind me, but I have to recline.
And who do you think is to blame when it comes to this? Do you agree with our guest, or do you think that, you know, it's something between passengers, or are the airlines at the end of the line here?
I think the airlines have made the space much too small. I'm pretty much okay because I'm only 5'6", but my husband is 6'2", and if he doesn't get an aisle seat, he wouldn't be able to move his legs at all.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for telling us what you think, Linda. And we're going to get our guest in on this. William J. McGee is with us, writer, consumer journalist, and author of Attention All Passengers. What do you think, William?
Well, the caller brings up an interesting point. And, you know, she mentioned she was on an international flight. And it should be noted that, you know, the seat pitch, again, the distance between rows, it varies tremendously within airlines from aircraft type to aircraft type. The good news is that international flights are often operated by larger wide-body aircraft, and generally the seat pitch is going to be a little bit better because, you know, she's right. For many people, it's such a long flight and the distance in time zones that, you know, many people want to sleep. But, you know, on domestic flights, what we've seen now is this dramatic influx. Another huge change in the airline industry in recent years in the United States is, you know, the outsourcing to regional carriers, for example. And they often have the worst seat pitch of all. Regional airlines are now operating 61% or more of all the domestic flights for the largest carriers, American, United, Delta, U.S. Airways. So, you know, if you're flying within the United States, chances are you're going to be in a very uncomfortable seat if you're in economy.
And since you have such experience with this, William, are there tips that you have for being more comfortable in your tiny little sardine seat?
Well, obviously, you know, it varies from passenger to passenger because, you know, based on your size and your height and so many other factors. I generally try and get an exit row if I can. I also try and get an aisle seat if I can. I have found that, you know, many airlines now are trying to charge you more. They try and charge you more fees for, you know, what they call preferred seating. So they're holding back on assigning seats until the very end. I don't know if you've had this experience, but you might have booked a flight recently and you were told you couldn't get a seat assignment. You have to wait until the day that you're flying.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do is I keep late hours anyway, so I wait until after midnight, and then I call the airline's reservation system, and I speak to a human being, and I just say, hey, look, could you help me here? I'd really like to have a decent seat. And 9 times out of 10, that works.
Hmm.
You know, it's become a system that we have to game in different ways, you know, because, again, I mean, for any of us that have been flying for more than, you know, 10 or 15 years, it was a completely different experience when you had so many empty seats. You know, you didn't have people rubbing up against each other, literally, and certainly, you know, rubbing on each other's nerves, too.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Alex is with us next in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks. What do you think?
Well, you know, I've been flying for a number of years, and it definitely has, the comfortability has decreased. But, you know, with this just being a more common way of people flying and of traveling, I'm sorry, it just becomes, you know, it becomes an issue of simple, you know, human interaction. Everybody knows that, you know, at this point it shouldn't be a surprise that a plane is probably not going to be the most comfortable form of transportation. But you know, being able to communicate with the people around you, and obviously there's going to be people who are in bad moods when they get to the airport and they're just not going to want to cooperate, but you know, I feel like simple basic human interaction is not going to necessarily fix the problem, but it's going to make the situation a lot more enjoyable than everybody being angry and jumbled up, and everybody knows that everybody's uncomfortable, and we just have to kind of, you know, make it work for now until there's a solution or a better system.
Gotcha.
To go with.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Some good thoughts there. A little bit of both of your points there, William. One, basic civility. Two, you know, the airlines are at capacity, so you are going to be really up close and personal with your fellow travelers.
True. You know, what I would say, though, is that the difference of a couple inches can be all the difference in the world. And, you know, we don't have to have aircraft configured the way they are. I notice there's been a lot of, you know, some misinformation published in recent weeks about blaming the aircraft manufacturers, for example. You know, they work for the customers, which are the airlines, and they'll configure those seats any way you want. And in fact, many airlines have the ability to change, the distance between rows of seats, almost overnight. They're on, the seats are laid on tracks. So you pull the carpeting up and you can move them. So this is a deliberate decision, as I said. And again, I'm just, you know, think that, you know, before we start bashing each other's heads in, either in the cabins or online, we should talk about, you know, some of the root issues here. And, you know, cabins that are a little less crowded and seats that are a few more inches apart will make all the difference in the world.
So is this something that you're seeing growing out of the need to fend or fracas here, people coming together to say, you know what, the bigger issue is that there's not enough room, and therefore we should all get together and tell the airlines we want a couple more inches?
Well, that's, you know, that's exactly why I wrote this article for Yahoo News last week. The fact is that, you know, that is my view. I think, you know, that too many people are sort of taking a narrow view of this, quite frankly. I think, you know, we need to sort of step back and say, you know, why is it that, you know, that people ride subways and trains and buses every day without the type of, you know, air rage incidents that happen on airplanes? And I think it's a question worth asking. I wrote about it in my book, Attention All Passengers. You know, a lot of this, I think, is systemic. And I think it's, you know, there's sort of this, you know, this formula that by the time we get to our seats, we've already been through so much stress that, you know, as I say, tempers are frayed.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Alex. And on to Kristen in Prairie du Sac. Hey, Kristen.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say that, well, first of all, I mean, I think it's the airlines are at fault here. I mean, people have to own their own behavior and their own actions, obviously. But, you know, when the airlines kind of funnel everyone over this cattle car and then they, you know, incidents like this keep happening, you know, there needs to be some responsibility taken. And I'm kind of surprised that consumers aren't, you know, a little more outraged and demanding more space, you know, and I mean, I'm 5'11". My husband is 6'6". We are incredibly cramped on airlines. So it's like, we have to be really seriously committed to wherever we're going. You know, but in the same respect, you buy the seat, you pay your fee just like everybody else. You kind of buy the features that seat has to offer. So if that means that it reclines, then you pay for that. You know, it's a feature of the plane.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. Interesting perspective there. And, you know, I wonder if part of what she's getting at is that, you know, we often as passengers, there's not a lot of option. A lot of people buy according to price. And if the cheapest seat comes on a plane with less legroom, that's what you get. Is there a way around that?
Well, it's an excellent point, you know, because when you speak about the airline industry, you know, to state the obvious, geography is a key point. And so, you know, people in big cities often talk about choice or in hub airports. But unfortunately, in much of the United States, you know, including in Wisconsin, the choices are much more limited than they are in other places. And so, you know, for example, I go to Washington a lot to testify in Congress and testify before the Department of Transportation on airline issues. And I live in Connecticut. And, you know, I'll say to you without any irony that whenever I go to Washington, I travel by Amtrak to discuss the airline industry, you know. And I have never had an uncomfortable seat on Amtrak. Even when Amtrak is absolutely full and every seat is taken, you know, the seat pitch, the seat width, it's just a much more comfortable experience. No matter how tall you are, how big you are, you know, you're going to be comfortable, much more so than on an airline. So the idea that, well, we just have to throw up our hands and accept this, you know, I don't agree with that.
And William, in our final moments here, what do you want to see come out of this?
Well, I'd like to have a national discussion that doesn't pit passenger against passenger. You know, I see both sides of this. I truly do. I see that, you know, there are people that say, well, I bought a ticket. The airline marketed and advertised my ticket as saying that I have a seat that can recline. I want to, you know, I have a business meeting to go to and I want to take a nap. And now I'm being told I can't recline. It's false advertising. I see that point of view. I also see the point of view of somebody that has a tray table jammed into their ribs or a seat, you know, jammed into their knees. And they're extremely uncomfortable for 4 or 5 or 6 hours. I certainly see that point of view as well. What I'd like to see come out of this is a better dialogue, a national dialogue about the airline industry itself and what the changes it needs to do.
William, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with William J. McGee, writer, consumer journalist, and the author of Attention All Passengers.